Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Latin standards. A few include Perfidia by Alberto Dominguez Borrás.
Las veces que me ha visto llorar la perfidia de tu amor.
Or Bésame Mucho by Consuelo Velázquez.
Bésame, bésame mucho.
Or Willie Chevalier's En un último escalón.
Y en el último escalón frente a mi puerta te detienes sin querer entrar.
Latin Standards is also the title of the one-woman show by Marga Gomez. She's the daughter of Willie Chevalier. Chevalier, whose name was Wilfredo Gomez, was a Cuban comedian, producer, composer, and vaudevillian. Marga Gomez's mother was the Puerto Rican dancer Margo Gomez. Marga followed her parents' footsteps into show business via comedy. Marga was one of the first few out comedians of the time and pursued her career from New York to an exciting counterculture scene in California in the 1980s. She's since produced 12 solo plays and has received a GLAAD Award, a Theater LA Ovation Award, and is a three-time recipient of the Best of the Bay Comedian Award by the San Francisco Bay Guardian. Latin Standards recalls Gomez's childhood in Manhattan's Washington Heights. It portrays the colorful characters she encounters in her journey from her youth in 1960s New York to present-day San Francisco. She ponders her late father's dance tunes that dwelled on jealousy and obsession. I had a chance to talk to Gomez during a performance of Latin Standards at San Antonio's Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. She says the name of her show has several meanings.
It is definitely this man that I idolize to this day who had maybe not the best information for me growing up to be a young woman. And he had, as a somewhat chauvinist Latino man, he had double standards for how a woman should lead her life and how a man can lead his life. But the overriding meaning of Latin Standards is that this is a piece that really focuses on the relationship and the effects of growing up with my dad, my Cuban comedian, impresario, micromanaging dad, who, when business changed, he adapted. Latin Standards is a lot about displacement as well. But what he did to kind of keep working and to also express himself was he wrote these songs. He wrote these songs that we call standards. In all kinds of music, you'll find that there's a canon and there are standards. And so his songs became hits. They were recorded by Trio de Oro and Los Condes. And they were very, especially big in the 50s and 60s. And these were all my father's friends, so he would write these songs that were breakup songs, and they were sort of inspired by my mother. You know, the woman is cruel, the man is good. But they were catchy tunes. So they recorded a couple of his songs. They went gold. Muzak, which I'm not sure if you know what Muzak is, but it was a background.
Elevator music.
Elevator music. So they got picked up by Muzak. My father was so happy he got all this money. And so that's what Latin Standards really, that was the core of the idea for the title of Latin Standards.
I want to talk a little bit about your upbringing. You were born in New York, Cuban, Puerto Rican background. Can you explain to us what your upbringing was like and how that culture helped sort of define who you are?
Well, I was born in New York, and I came from a Cuban father and a Puerto Rican mother. And when my parents married, there was an expression, los puertorriqueños y los cubanos are wings of the same bird. And my joke is, yeah, and that bird can't fly because it always pulls to the right. I think that there's a universality to the piece that really looks into the immigrant experience. The other thing about me is, unfortunately, when I grew up with a Puerto Rican mother and a Cuban father who spoke Spanish mostly, and I think they did it so that I wouldn't know what they were saying, because they sent me to Catholic school, which was dominated by Irish nuns who did not like brown children or any child with a Z at the end of its name. And I became very assimilated. So I'm sort of just an oddity. I'm a little of this, I'm a little of that.
And so you come from a background, obviously, of entertainment in your with your mother and your father. And so did that kind of influence you to sort of go into this world of maybe not the kind of entertainment your mother and father were into, but to please a crowd? Did that have any influence on you? And did your parents say anything like, no, Mija, you don't want to do that. Go to school, be a lawyer, be a doctor?
That's a great question. Latin Standards is about the parallel career that I have embarked on. When I was growing up, I was the only child that my parents had together. You know, I would just be kind of like just this little fly on the wall, and all their flamboyant show business friends would come over. They would have rehearsals. They would have parties. They would be dressed up in these shiny outfits, and they'd go paint the town. And especially my father, who was also known as a comedian, and that's what I pursued. By 7 years old, I couldn't speak a word of Spanish, which was the first language I learned as a baby. But I was pressured by these, you know, these forces outside of my family to suddenly lose all my Spanish. So I thought, well, I can't be in these shows that my parents do. And then as I got older, I got to be a teenager, my parents split up, and my mother moved us, me and her new husband, to the white suburbs. And then I was like 13, and all those things that affect the, you know, the mentality of a young girl, I started losing my dreams. I thought, well, I can't be a performer like my parents, even in the entertainment industry of the dominant culture, America, Hollywood, all that, because I don't look like those people. I'm a brown girl. I'm a, you know, sort of a tomboy, masculine presenting person. And so then I gave up on all of that. You know, I left New York, my parents in New York, after I came out as a lesbian, and my parents didn't take it very well. So I went to California. I just went, like, how far can I get away from them? So I went all the way to California, to San Francisco, which had this amazing, this is in the 80s, had this amazing counterculture art scene, and it had a comedy scene that was just getting underway in the 80s. Robin Williams came out of there. Ellen DeGeneres came out of there. And I just started going to these open mics. So even though I didn't have the belief that I could succeed as a performer in the subculture of my parents, in the Hollywood mainstream, by the time I was 19, I came to San Francisco and I realized I can actually be on stage. I can entertain people, but the people who are intersecting with Latino culture and gay culture and progressive culture in general, and that's where my comedy career and my solo performance career began, in that wonderful, nurturing climate that was San Francisco before gentrification.
Marga Gomez is a comedian, writer, and performer. Her 12th show is Latin Standards. When we come back.
And then I was on this track to be the Latina Whoopi Goldberg, the gay Jennifer Lopez.
More with Marga Gomez next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Marga Gomez is a comedian, performer, and writer. Her 12th solo play is Latin Standards. It debuted off Broadway in New York's Public Theater in 2017, and it's since been performed across the U.S. in cities like Chicago, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. The show is a tribute to her father, Willie Chevalier, a Cuban comedian and songwriter who performed in the golden era of New York's farándulas, Latino variety shows. Gomez brought Latin Standards to San Antonio in September, and I had a chance to talk to her prior to one of her shows at the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center.
You know, my career was a mix of work, working hard, and being in the right place at the right time. So for me to leave New York, come to San Francisco, where there was a very supportive gay community, a very supportive progressive Latino community, I wound up working and I wound up earning enough to pay my rent. And, you know, I still don't have loads of money, but I've been able to just be a performer for 35 years. The obstacles that I faced were more in the 90s when suddenly I started doing these solo shows. But my first solo show, Memory Tricks, was about my mother who was getting ill. And it got picked up, and I wound up at the Public Theater, and I got these reviews that were national reviews, and then I bounced around from San Francisco to New York and then settled in L.A. because I got signed by CAA, one of the most powerful talent agencies in, you know, that we know of in the world. And then I was on this track to be the Latina Whoopi Goldberg, the gay Jennifer Lopez, and... Oh, I was seeing dollar signs. I've never learned to drive because I thought, well, why should I? I'm going to be driven all the time. And then it turned out that I learned that talent agencies don't have your best interest in mind. And when they found that, you know, the little movies that I got in were flops, suddenly they lost interest in me. You know, I was the shiny object in the 90s in L.A. But the obstacle that I faced, of course, was... Yeah, my lesbianism, although all these agents at CAA, they knew it, and they said, this is classic, well, you don't have to bring it up. You could do, you know, what Ellen DeGeneres was doing, which was just being who she was when the cameras weren't around. But I thought, well, no, because I'm best when I'm completely candid. Like, back then in the 90s, the obstacle was, don't talk about your lesbianism, and... can you soften your look a little bit? Which was like, they don't know what they want. You know, they just want, can you make us $1 billion?
Just in the last decade or so, this country has made such leaps and bounds in the acceptance of the LGBTQ community. And you've been talking about this for years in your comedy. Do you feel like your career or the audiences have changed a bit since those changes have been coming? I mean, you're probably, I don't, maybe I'm assuming this, but you're probably playing in more venues that you never probably would have imagined playing before.
The interesting thing is that I was playing more venues before Logo, before Ellen came out, before suddenly the LGBT community got this taste for mainstream success. Because my work has always been about the intersectionality of people of color and LGBT people and the connection to class struggle. So what the gay performance scene is now, and I guess I'll just say comedy because that's the big moneymaker, is it's about mainstreaming. It's not about being political. And so I have found that also, I was one of the few out comedians, and now there, you know, there's just so many everywhere you look. It hasn't actually benefited me because I have played on the mound of Yankee Stadium. I've been on TV. I've done all these things, and now it's generational. It's also about a youth culture now, and voices of people over 40, over 50 are not as highly regarded as they used to be when I started, and it's okay. I'm glad there's acceptance. I mean, I do wish that there would be more of the intersectional awareness and more of the interest in politics, in entertainment. But right now, all we have to do is just vote and get the country in order. And, you know, I work enough. But it's just, for me, very gratifying that a place like Esperanza has persevered through these decades and that the community in San Antonio doesn't just respect differences, but celebrates differences. I mean, that's the feeling I have from the community in San Antonio.
And so where do you go from here? What are you thinking about what's coming up after Latin Standards?
Oh, yes. I'm in New York right now rehearsing for a part in a play, in an off-Broadway world premiere. So that's been very unexpected and exciting because... you know, I work solo, so to be in a cast with other people is really cool. You know, it's It's a whole new set of skills. So this is a very exciting project. Latin Standards is, it's my heart. And this show, when it opens in New York in November, you know, we'll see what happens, because a lot of people come in, and maybe I'll get back in the old TV industry loop. They see, you know, we're ready for that kind of lesbian, that kind of Latina. We're ready. Let's bring her in. I'm also working on my 13th one-person show, which is called Spanking Machine. And it sounds a little dirty, but really what it is, it's about how we are controlled by fear in our lives, and how we let fear, maybe dictate what we do in the ballot box, or how we maybe check out of a relationship. It's set in New York, where I grew up, in Washington Heights, and it's sort of incited by my experience in Catholic school as a young woman. It touches on assault, but it's also comedic. I tend to write these pieces that just kind of mess with people's heads. They're laughing, they're crying, they're anxious, they're relaxed. And I think a theater piece should, incite every kind of emotion inside a person.
Marga Gomez is a comedian, writer, and performer. Her 12th solo play is Latin Standards. Gomez stars in the world premiere of the off-Broadway play Dr. Ride's American Beach House, October 21st through November 23rd, in Ars Nova at Greenwich House in New York City. Find out more about Marga Gomez at margagomez.com. The Alamo is the cradle of Texas liberty, but it's also the site of a Catholic cemetery. The famous battleground served as a mission to area Catholics for many years before it was secularized and memorialized in Texas history. San Antonio's American Indians used Indigenous Peoples Day to draw attention to the recent discovery of human remains on the site. There are no gravestones that mark the final resting places of the 1,000-plus Canary Islanders, Spanish settlers, and indigenous peoples buried on the grounds of the Alamo. Documents, however, prove those remains exist underneath tourists' feet, nonstop traffic, and surrounding buildings and parks. Current archaeological research tied to a multi-million-dollar renovation of the Alamo recently unearthed what the General Land Office described as human bone fragments. The announcement was made last Friday. Ramon Vasquez is a member of the Tepilam Coahuiltecan Nation, the descendants of the indigenous peoples of South Texas and northern Mexico. He says that announcement came 2 months too late.
I did an open records request, and these remains were found August, 2 months ago, and they've continued to find them since then. You're in a cemetery, my goodness, why be surprised that you found human remains?
Those remains had previously been disturbed by utility construction projects some years prior. There's an aggressive timeline to complete renovation work at the Alamo by 2024. An archaeological committee was selected that includes 5 federally recognized tribes to develop a protocol on how to address human remains. Neither tribe has direct ties to South Texas. The Tepilam Coahuiltecan Nation is not a federally recognized tribe and was not invited to sit on the committee. The Tepilam Coahuiltecan Nation sued the Texas General Land Office, the nonprofit Alamo Trust, the City of San Antonio, and the Texas Historical Commission. Here's Ramon Vasquez.
The defendants have 12 lawyers. We have our 2 from Von Army. So this is definitely a David and Goliath scenario. The Texas Historical Commission has already filed a motion to dismiss based on government immunity. We anticipate all the other governmental agencies will do the same. And our lawyers will respond accordingly, and we believe that we'll prevail.
The Alamo site was declared a historic Texas cemetery by the Texas Historical Commission, which is a largely honorary label. The Tepilam Coahuiltecan Nation wants the Alamo site officially declared a cemetery. The group also accuses the state of ignoring federal laws that would allow lineal descendants a say in ongoing preservation efforts at the Alamo. Antonio Diaz, a Pamoque Indian, has ancestors buried at the Alamo. He expressed his frustration Monday at a press conference in front of the Alamo.
When they made this street, they dug them up. When they made these renovations, they dug them up. They're doing these renovations and they're digging them up again.
Diaz says his heritage and the larger history of the region are being erased by a project that's focusing solely on the timeline of one famous battle.
Now they're just glorifying that battle in that short time frame. And again, I'm going to say it because it's a white supremacy. I'm going to say it. That's when they took over and they created their own narrative of that time frame and what matters to them. And the hell with everyone else.
Archaeological research continues at the Alamo. A press release issued by the GLO stated the human remains were respectfully covered under the supervision of an on-site tribal monitor. The lawsuit filed by the Tepilamcoa Wiltecans gets its first hearing in court next month. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. And our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.